I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. David Ditchfield is a near-death experiencer, inspired artist, composer, author. He wants to use his NDE to make positive differences in your lives. In 2006, he was dragged under a speeding train in a freak accident. We'll talk about that. As the surgeons fought to save him, he had a profound near-death experience. When he woke in the hospital, he had acquired some astonishing new abilities, and he found that he could paint dramatic paintings of what he had seen in the afterlife. We've got those at coasttocoastam.com. Far beyond any artistic ability he had before. And then he discovered he could compose classical music, having never received any training. That's amazing. His book is called Shine On. David, welcome to the program. Looking forward to this with you tonight.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me on.
Tell me how you got pulled under a speeding train.
Right. Okay.
Oh, my God. Well, I hate to have you relive this again, but we got to find out what happened to you.
No worries. I've spoken about it quite a few times now. So, basically what happened was I'd been living in London at the time, and my sister lived in Cambridge and out in the country. And she said, come and spend a few days with us, because I was down on my luck, really, at that point in my life, and I needed a break. So I was up there for a few weeks. And a friend that I just met in London came up and stayed with me. And I was seeing her off at the rail station. She needed to get back to town. And I helped her onto the train carriage with her bags and, you know, gave her a hug. And I was just kissing her goodbye. And then I heard the emergency buzzers going for the doors about to close. So she was going, David, get off. I was going, yeah, I'm going, don't worry. And as I stepped back, it was a very cold February day.
Yeah.
And my coat got caught in the actual closing doors.
Oh.
Doors. So like the bottom half of it was trapped in there, you know, and it was like, oh boy, you know. I tried to pull it free, but it was like a good quality sheepskin. And it wasn't going to come out. So I called for help. I looked around, and there was no guard on the platform that day. And I thought, no, there was only one other guy, actually, just behind me who'd been seeing off his partner also. And, you know, he said, take your coat off, mate. You know,
right, exactly.
And I said, yeah. I said, there's no way it's going to come off, because the sheepskin lining was, like, so thick. It was just, you know, hugging the arms of the whole jacket, as it
were. You were trapped in it.
Exactly. There was no way it was just going to slip out. So I started banging on the windows, shouting for help, hitting the automatic door buttons, but nothing happened.
Oh.
So I just stood there, and I was looking at my friend Anna, and we were just staring through the glass at each other. And the look of horror on her face was just, understandable. And then at that point, I figured, well, this is it. You know, the engines were just revving up to leave, and I figured I'm not going to get away from this, you know, and I'm probably going to die at this point. And it started pulling up pace, and the train went incredibly fast. It's amazing how fast a train pulls out of a station when you're on the outside of it. You believe you and me, it's like it's a different story. You don't realize.
Oh, my God.
And I lost my footing eventually and was dragged along the platform. And then I was pulled between the gap of the platform edge and the train itself. And then
you're kind of like in that groove, kind of like in a groove, right?
Yeah, that's it. And it's not a very wide gap at all. But because of the full speed and thrust of the train and me still being attached to it, I went down. And I just remember thinking, well, this is it. I'm going to die, you know. And I was just pulled down, and I remember seeing the side of the carriages seemed to disappear into the sky, and it was like a tremendous drop. And then I was thrown into like this darkness, and I was just tossed around like a rag doll, and I was like bashed around from the, you know, the side of the wall to the train.
Oh,
and all over
my
the place.
God!
Yeah, and then I was conscious throughout the whole thing, so it was incredibly terrifying.
Could you see people looking down at you, David, from the train?
No. It was just what I'm saying is, as I got pulled down, I just remember seeing the side of the carriage doors seem to disappear up into the sky. But by then, I was in complete darkness. I was just, right underneath, and was just being, you know, thrown all over the place. And I landed literally on the gravel of in between the tracks, and the train was still going on above my head at a high speed by then.
And you're bouncing, you're basically bouncing along. Your legs are being dragged around and everything.
Well, it was just like being thrown into a washing machine, you know, on full speed. You know,
oh my God!
It was just complete chaos, and incredibly frightening. And then I just kind of lay with my face down into the gravel, and I just figured to myself, it's not over yet, you know. I could get hit by part of the undercarriage of the train. So.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, or there could be something hanging on the top there, on, you know, where people stand to get on the train as it's going down the path. Are you still underground, or are you above ground?
I was underneath the actual train at that point, so it was more of the, like, some of the undercarriage of the train.
Oh, my
you
know, God.
So I just kind of went into, I was in survival mode, basically, and I just figured, right, at this stage, it's amazing how much I thought things through, you know, and I thought, okay, think of the Indiana Jones movies and, you know, 007 James Bond movies where, you know, they're in this situation. Just put your head down and keep it right down, you know, which is what I did. And the train eventually moved on.
Did you ever pass out?
No, I didn't do.
You stayed awake. And then how did you finally get out of this situation?
Well, basically, the train moved on, I was just left lying down there in between the rails, you know. And
you basically disengaged from the train?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Disengaged from it,
The coat ripped away or something like that?
Yeah, it ripped as I fell down. As I said, that when I saw that, when I first went down and was pulled right under, I think the sheer force then ripped the coat. I just remember hearing this tremendous rip, and down I went, you know. So,
So the train finally passes you, right, I guess?
That's right, yeah.
And then there you are in the tracks, just laying there?
Yeah, I'm just lying there in the track, and then I just remember looking up and seeing like this sheer blue sky above me, and just the contrast of the hell and darkness I'd just been through, and lying on the oily tracks and seeing this beautiful blue sky was just like, wow, hello.
Now, physically,
I'm alive, you know.
Physically, what had happened to you? I mean, did you still have your legs and stuff like that?
Well, my left arm was actually severed from the elbow down, so that's like the first thing I noticed. So, yeah, I just noticed that this fine, thick coat that I got on was now shredded, and the whole arm was just completely ripped open. And also, you know, then I realized at that point that my left arm had been completely, you know, I was in a bad way. It was pretty messy.
I guess so.
But
do
I
you
in, Yeah, it was incredible because I was in shock, you know, and stuff. And the first thing I thought of, right, let me get my cell phone out and phone my sister to let her know what's happened. It's just
you were that cognizant of making a phone call.
Yeah, but kind of and not, you know, because that's what I figured I should do. But like, obviously, that was a crazy thing to be thinking of. You know, I pulled the phone out and it was smashed anyhow. But by that time, help had arrived like literally within seconds. You know, and then the paramedics arrived, and these guys were incredible. They managed to get me off the trap eventually, and then up onto the platform, which is about, you know, 6 or 7 foot up in height, and. Yeah, so that was a very painful process, just getting me off the track, you know. And,
did they ever find your arm? I mean, were they ever able to?
The arm was still there. Yeah, it wasn't. Everything was with me still. In fact, the surgeons at the hospital. That's one of the things I had begged them to do when they pulled me in. I said, "Look, can you please save my left arm?" and they did. I mean, it's they managed to sew it back on. And
so you've got your left arm. Is it functional?
It's fairly functional, not completely, but you know, it's pretty good. I mean, it's amazing what they can do. I mean, this was like three very long 8-hour operations to be able to save it and to.
Oh my God! Now, at what point, David, did you have the near death experience?
Okay, well, basically, they got me in an ambulance and they sped me down the highway and I went into I went to Addenbrooke's Hospital, which is like a big university hospital in Cambridge. So I was lucky that we got this hospital there. So I arrived and I remember going into the emergency department and I remember seeing this big, huge semicircle of doctors and consultants and nurses waiting for me. So this whole team were like racing around trying to save me. I was losing copious amounts of blood at that point. And it was when I was actually in the emergency department that I was lying on the trolley with all this frantic noise going on around me that I suddenly left. Well, I was in agony as well. So I left that whole moment of being in pain and all the bright lights shining in my eyes to a completely dark and warm place. And all the pain had gone. And I was lying in what I thought was just like a really dark, beautiful, warm room. And I could see at first like these pulsating colors all around me. They were just kind of like little orbs of light, which were just slowly pulsating. And it was just calming me. And I just thought, wow, this is just like beautiful. What a contrast from the hell I'd just been through. And I lay there and then I suddenly felt a presence and I looked at my feet and just at my right hand foot, I saw what was, I could only describe as this beautiful androgynous being, like a beautiful sort of person with, mm-hmm. with like blonde white hair and like glowing skin. And this person was just like stood there smiling at me with a knowing smile. And I thought, it's like I'd known this androgynous being the whole of my life and beyond. You know, it was like there was a strong connection there. And I just felt that this person was watching over me and guarding me. So I figured at this point that this is it, you know, that I'd died. And I'd gone on to the next stage. And
did you want to come back?
No, at that point, I thought, this is great. I had no sense of panic or fear that this is death. It was actually, I went with it completely and thought, well, this is great, because I felt so calm. And so the interesting thing as well, this being was wearing like a black T-shirt, like a sort of, you know, very contemporary sort of shirt and nothing sort of ethereal. So it felt like, you know, there was a sense of knowing between us, and like some, you know, when you meet somebody, say at a party and you connect straight away, and you feel like you've known this person all your life. It was a bit like
right.
that, but by times by ten, you know, or more. So I laid my head back at that point, and I suddenly realized that I was lying on on a huge kind of like slate rock, like a medieval altar, if you like. And it was just like, I thought, but it was very comfortable. And I laid back and I looked down to check my injuries, to look at my body to see how it was all looking. And everything was fixed. My whole body was completely intact. My left arm, there was no scars or bruising. And I was covered in this like blue sheet, and the blue sheet was kind of like a satin sort of silky texture to it, and it was just keeping me very cool and calm and relaxed. Then I laid my head back onto the rock, and as I looked up, there were like three grids of white light that were like just slowly hovering above my head. And I couldn't take my gaze away from these grids of light, because the light that was coming from them was just like a pure white light, and it was just it was very bright light. But I wouldn't be able to look into something so bright like sunlight or electric light that bright. But this I could, and I just couldn't take my gaze away, because it was like a healing sort of light. The sensation was just so very comforting. So I just figured, well, what is going on here? You know, this is like, I felt like I was being prepared for something.
And this is still when you're physically in the ambulance?
No. This is at this stage, I was actually in the hospital.
You're back in the hospital. Okay.
Yeah, I was in the hospital. And so I'm looking up at these bright white lights, these grids. And then I suddenly realized that there were two other beings with me, either side of me, a female form. One of them was like an Asian or American sort of Indian appearance, and the other one was white Caucasian. And they both had their hands kind of hovering over my body, and they were like healing me, really, almost like a Reiki healing sort of form. But the energy that was coming from their hands was just like really powerful. It was like this sensation of almost like love. It was like a very intense form of love that was just coming from all three of these beings, basically. And it was like an energy that was just going right through my body. That every single molecule of me was kind of almost vibrating with this beautiful sensation. Well,
physically, how long were you out? Were you in a coma? Nothing like that.
I wasn't in a coma at all while this was happening. But you know, back on the Earth plane, if you like, I was still conscious. But this is the actual near-death experience itself. This is a different plane altogether from being in a state of coma, you know.
And this NDE that you had, David, was a one-time NDE, or did you fall back into it and die again and come back, or was it just one time?
No, I stayed in the NDE, and that was it. It continued on, and I was still there at this stage, as it were. Yeah, so.
Because your pictures, your artwork, they're remarkable, and it's gorgeous. The other side must look good, huh?
The what, sorry?
The other side must look pretty good.
It's amazing. It's a beautiful sight to see. The next thing that I saw while I was there, which is in one of my paintings, as I was lying on this huge rock, I figured that my family were still down in the hospital, because they'd all rushed in to see me, and I thought, well, they must be grieving over my dead body right now, because I figured that I was dead. And so I looked over the edge of this big huge rock, hoping to see them. And as I looked down, I didn't see them at all in the hospital, but what I did see was like this beautiful waterfall of stars. It was like a huge, huge arc of stars that was just kind of cascading down into galaxies and into the infinity, basically. And it was just like a beautiful sight. And there was lots of deep colors within the base of this infinity. I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I, of course, I knew by then that I wasn't in this small, darkened room that I figured that I was actually in the universe itself. And so it was really quite tremendous.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.